Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is season 3, episode 1. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with WISP Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, Director of the Tucker Center. The Tucker Center is a first-of-its-kind, world-class research center housed at the University of Minnesota, and we are a thought leader that accelerates systems change for girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I talk to, amplify, and support my female colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. We let the data tell the story and talk about our research and ways that we are striving together to change the world through the context of sport to be a better place. Boy, as we begin 2021, good riddance 2020. This podcast is fitting because women around the world in all social institutions are leading the efforts to change the world, fight for social justice, and create change, including sport, as evidenced by the recent disruption that we saw with the WNBA League and their athletes who helped unseat their owner and U.S. Senator Kelly Loeffler in a runoff election earlier in January 2020. If you want to stay up to date on disruptions to the normative model of sport created by and for men that privileges men and why it matters, I'm inviting you to join us in becoming a disruptor by going to tuckercenter.org and subscribe to our disruptors emailing list. So in this podcast, speaking of disruptors, in this podcast, I am going to talk to Dr. Laura Burton, professor and department head in the NAGG School of Education at UConn, TC-affiliated scholar, gender and sport leadership expert, and all-around badass woman who has lived a personal and professional life of fighting for gender equity. Welcome, Dr. Burton, to Tucker Center Talks.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Lavoie. It's a privilege.
Absolutely great way to start season 3. So tell us about your research as it relates to gender and sport.
Sure. When I think about it broadly, it really is thinking about women's access to and opportunities for success in leadership positions, specifically in sport organizations. I also have a chance to do some work with colleagues because I'm housed in a Department of Educational Leadership. So a lot of the issues that we think about within sport also carry over into women in educational leadership. But it's really broadly about access, access to leadership and then success within the role. When I first started thinking about this, I was really thinking about it from the perspective of stereotypes and how women are perceived in leadership roles and how that has an impact on, again, their ability to gain access and how they're evaluated when they're in them. As my career has evolved, I really think more about organizational practices, right? And how do we disrupt those practices and deconstruct them because they are gendered? And I think that's where the real key to greater access and equity within sport leadership lies. We know that there's limits to how much we can de-bias people's thinking and whether that really sticks. So with that understanding, we have to continue to push back against policies and practices that we can change, right? We can change things so that we can compensate for, but it really is this notion that, okay, we're not going to de-bias folks, so we have to de-bias systems. And that's where I think my work is at this point.
It's really interesting you say that, Dr. Burton, because my own work and my own thinking has sort of gone along those same lines. You know, my expertise is around women in leadership, but particularly coaches, as were yours, is coaches and athletic administration and women in positions of power in sport. And I would invite the listeners to check out the book that you edited with fellow Tucker Center affiliated scholar, Dr. Sarah Lieberman, called Women in Sport Leadership, I believe is that the title by Rutledge? Yes.
Thank you for that shout out.
Yes. Great book. Really good chapters written by experts in the field on women in sport leadership. But, you know, I have landed on the same thought, is that if we really want to create social change and fight for social justice and equity for everybody, women and other minority populations, it has to be systems change. It has to, because the system is set up by white men for white men, and the system is working really well for them. And we need to disrupt that. So it's really interesting that as colleagues and peer scholars, we're sort of landing on that same spot at this point in our careers.
And I think this moment of there's so the twin pandemics, as we call them, right? The COVID crisis as one, and then the social justice uprising as a function of Black Lives Matter movement and the work that the amazing work that women have done in that sphere, has really exposed those organizational inequities, right? Who has disproportionately been burdened by both of these systems? And, you know, there's strong arguments for women, but in particular women of color, who have really had to deal with these twin pandemics. And, you know, when I've been thinking about, and I'm sure you have, we don't know what this is going to look like on the other side for women in sport. We really don't.
But no, we don't.
We can surmise that it's going to be harder. We're going to likely lose women from the field, from, you know, there's going to be some loss. And I think, again, this is a function not of individual women making decisions or individual practices, but it's really about how organizations have just not allowed for different ways of working and being. And I worry a lot about that, right? That we have a whole host of things to worry about, but I do wonder what it'll look like on the other side of this for women in sport leadership.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, COVID has provided some opportunity and some illumination to the system, but it's also sort of halted some of the momentum and the advancement that women in sport were experiencing. And I certainly was feeling optimistic prior to the pandemic that we might finally be at a tipping point of change. And I feel that's halted, and it might actually go backwards. It's too soon to tell, but I also am concerned about that. Yeah. What would you say if you were the sport organizational czar, right? And you got to make one change to the system. What would you do? What would be the biggest bang for the buck that you would implement?
Oh, it's a great question. And I think it's this is a bigger answer, but there's then nuance to the policy, but really how we understand work and how we kind of measure work and success. And there are ways to, you know, I hesitate when we talk about that, you know, work-life balance, right? But the interface of work and life, and in sport, of all organizations, I think we still have an antiquated notion of what it means to be successful within that domain. So when I think about college athletics and this notion of the 24/7 work culture, right? And how family is always going to be secondary to that. And I use family broadly, right? In terms of just having some other things besides work in your life. And if we could dismantle that notion of what it means to be successful in a role in sport leadership. And to your point, it's very gendered and it's very racialized. It's very much built around what white men perceive to be success. Then I think we can make progress. And here's where I guess I'm hopeful when I think about the conversations that my colleagues are having at the university level around what it means to be successful for women in the academy, I think we can start to look for ways to redefine success, right? We're probably, and I'm sure you're having the same conversations at Minnesota, we're talking about the promotion, tenure, and review process. And is this, we just can't pause and then say, okay, we'll give everybody an extra year and then everybody will be back up to speed. So it's really much more about, well, how are we evaluating what's success in the professorate? And then saying, okay, let's now make this a more equitable system. So that, you know, means valuing service, valuing teaching, perhaps at a level that we haven't valued it. And I think about that perhaps in sport too, right? Where we can make maybe the connection is success, right? And I was going to, you know, Sarah and I speak about this in the book. We have a particular metric of success. Well, let's you know, really kind of think about that metric. Is that the best metric of success? Is winning and losing the best metric? So I'm optimistic in that regard that maybe there are ways to think differently about success because of the conversations I'm having at the university level.
That's an interesting point because the grind, the 24/7 clock always being accessible in college athletics and probably elite and pro levels as well, is it runs a risk of high burnout, which also then probably disadvantages women more because they're still primarily the domestic labor and caretakers in the home. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of young people in sport management or who want to go into coaching or athletic leadership, and they're looking at our generation going, I don't want that. And I think the professions might be in danger of losing a generation of young people and their talent if we don't do something about this way that we define success in the workplace, because the current generation is not going to have it. They won't do it. And, or they will help us change the system in a way so we can retain and recruit talent.
Right. And I think we, as the older generation, have to listen to them, right? And that folks have to say, no, there are actually better ways to do this and hear what they're saying instead of this kind of notion of, well, you just don't know yet because you're too new, or you're not seasoned enough, or you're immature, or you don't have your priorities straight kind of narrative. I agree.
So let me pivot a minute. What are you working on right now in terms of your research or your outreach and educational efforts that you're really excited about?
So one thing I'm really excited about, and this is the benefit of being able to work with doctoral students, is they're always bringing new ideas.
And
it's just so invigorating, right, to be able to work with emerging scholars. And I'm lucky enough to work with a young woman by the name of Ajahnay Newton, and, you know, mark her name down because she is going to be a leading scholar in our field, specifically around the intersection of race and gender. And one of the things she and I have been talking about, and this is an idea that she's proposed to me, and something that is also quite timely given what's been happening in the U.S., around this notion of whiteness and having conversations about whiteness as a credential. And she said to me, I don't see anybody studying how white women understand their racial privilege in sport. And I said, you're absolutely right. We are not studying this. So we have
zero studies to my knowledge.
Right, right.
Interesting.
So, yeah. There are women studying the intersection of race and gender and how Black women are experiencing leadership in sport organizations, but not this. So that's something we're looking at, really trying to understand the extent to which white women understand their racial privilege within sport organizations. So stay tuned on that.
Yeah, wow, that's really exciting. I can't wait to hear more about what you and your doctoral student find. And shout out to all the doctoral students listening. Mm-hmm. We do value you. you do energize us, and you are the future of our discipline. So stick with it.
Absolutely.
That's Dr. Burton,
one thing.
Yeah, let's skip ahead and talk about what advice would you give young women scholars, researchers, to help them survive and thrive this process of getting the dissertation and entering the academy if that's what they so choose?
One of the conversations that AJ and I have had is the importance, and I've heard this, and here's a shout out to another leader in the field, Mary Hums, and I have had this, I remember having this conversation with her when I was an early scholar. You have to find folks that you want to work with and know that you can't do it all on your own, right? I think we have this notion that I need to be able to kind of prove who I am. And of course, it's important to establish your line of inquiry, but seek out those folks that are critical thought partners who also share the same orientation to the work, share the same kind of framing and understanding of the world, and work together, right? This can be the type of profession where you can become very isolated, right? We're kind of, by nature, we are typically more introverted, and we can kind of bury our head in our work and our reading, but you really do need to develop your group, your peers. And so I so appreciate about you, Dr. Lavoie, is you reached out to me. I remember when you did, and I knew your work, and I thought, wow, like this is great, right? I've read it, and it's allowed us to then kind of continue to work together. So I think that's really critical, and that also invigorates you, especially when you get all the rejections from the manuscripts, and it's much easier to process rejection with friends over a glass of wine or something else.
Yes, we have all had rejections, and as we like to call reviewer two, the hammer.
Right.
Reviewer two.
That terrible reviewer two. It's easier to do that with friends.
I just submitted a review to a manuscript, and it came back from the editor, and I was reviewer two for that person. And I thought, no, I don't want to be reviewer two.
It happens. You become reviewer two.
It does. It does. So aside from finding your people and people that you trust and like and want to collaborate with, who have mutual respect, that don't have an ego or a chip in the game or a chip on their shoulder, what other advice would you give to young women scholars?
Don't be afraid to really do the work that you're passionate about. And that often is kind of going out on a limb, because you can receive the advice of that's not what editors are going to be reading, or that's not what I think is going to get you published in the field. And boy, that can really stifle creative experience, and it can also marginalize, right? We have to look critically within sport management scholarship and go, who are we privileging, and what ways of study and what ways of knowing are we privileging? So, explore what you want to explore, and there is an audience for it, and don't let folks tell you there isn't.
That's such great advice as a young, newly minted PhD who had a passion for gender and sport, a senior scholar in sports psychology. I remembered it's clear as day, and where we were, this scholar said to me, oh, you don't want to be that kind of scholar. And I thought, what the hell does that mean? And it really changed the trajectory of my work for years. Now, luckily, I listened to myself and came back to my passion, which is women and girls in sport. And I am that scholar. Thank you very much. But You know, for those listening, if you want to read a paper on this, I wrote with four other sports psychology peers. It's Butrin, Lavoie et al. In the Journal of Sociology and Sport, SSJ, and it's called We Walk the Line. And it's this idea that we were trained in sports psychology, but all of us sort of went over to sports sociology because we like the critical analysis that sociology afforded while being practically applicable in sports psychology, much like sport management. So there is room. There is space for that. You just have to find your people. All right. So we are wrapping things up here. So let's do a speed round of questions. All right. First, what is the one sticky idea that you think resonates with the public about your work?
It's something that I think we both explore, is this notion that women aren't evaluated the same way when they show up in coaching or in leadership as men. And that is something that seems obvious, but I don't think until the last couple of years, people are really seeing what that means, right? The coaches and the sport leaders that are fired, that are run out of their jobs, that it's really the system is not set up equally for men and women. So I think that continues to resonate.
Right. That men are afforded a much greater latitude in what they can do and say and how they behave. And when women do that, then they're punished, fired, discriminated against, and harassed. It's such a sticky idea. Okay. Favorite badass woman right now?
Well, I mean, it seems silly to not name her, and her name is right in front of me, but our incoming vice president, Kamala Harris, is the badass woman that I think we all are right behind and so excited to see in a leadership role as no one has ever seen.
Okay. Favorite book right now?
Oh, I'm reading Girl, Woman, Other. And it's a cool book. It's different because it takes the perspective of all of these different women. It's written in the voices of the women. They're Black women, predominantly lesbian or bisexual, and they're all in the UK. And it's a really interesting book.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll put that on the reading list. Your most influential female scholar?
So one that comes to mind, and she's a contemporary and a friend of ours, is Janet Fink.
Janet, the Finkster.
Shout out to Janet. Was so influential in my thinking, an incredible mentor, friend, peer. And so Janet is really the person I still look to for advice on all things, including scholarship.
Many of us do. Yes. Shout out to Dr. Fink at UMass Amherst and the School of Sport Management there. A very great colleague indeed, and also a Tucker Center affiliated scholar. So Dr. Burton, I would like to thank you for joining Tucker Center Talks. And I certainly appreciate your time today and your insight and sharing your gender and scholarship pathway with us. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
As we wrap up this episode of Tucker Center Talks, be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources on our website at tuckercenter.org and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can find the show notes with links and resources for this episode at wisports.com. Look for Tucker Center Talks under the Listen tab, where you'll find more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. Thank you to Dr. Laura Burton for being our guest on Tucker Center Talks and kicking off season 3. That's a wrap for Tucker Center Talks. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport. Stay safe, give yourself grace, support others, and let the data tell the story.